Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo. And tonight we're going to talk, we're going to do a lot of news tonight.
And
try to get a
little bit of an interview that we did.
With
John Brennan.
Yeah.
Who's really not an interview, he's really a regular guest on our FM radio show, the LA Steel Show. On Q103.3 out of Lakeville, Connecticut.
Right.
And he's a regular guest, and he usually does environmental issues, but he also comments on whatever's happening in the news that he feels is relevant to comment on. But in the meantime,
we're gonna read a little bit on. I'll get to that one in a minute. But well, actually, we can do it now. This is a fascinating short video. But it talks about a company that no one's ever heard of, but possibly
it's called Serco.
But it controls practically everything in the world.
How about that, folks?
Yeah, it's absolutely overwhelming.
So we'll just play you the audio.
Yeah, and I think you might really be interested in this. So,
The riot by asylum seekers at the Immigration Detention Center on Christmas Island a couple of weeks ago raised questions about how detainees were being handled. The Minister for Immigration, Chris Evans, said he was comfortable with the way the detention center was being managed. But who is actually managing it? Well, not the Department of Immigration. Earlier this year, the Rudd government outsourced the operation of Christmas Island and other detention centers to a British company with an interesting track record.
This is the Serco Group. They run all 7 immigration detention centres in Australia, but they do lots more. In fact, they're probably the biggest company you've never heard of. Governments all around the world outsource to Serco. They run half of London's traffic lights, all of Dublin's, and in Ontario, Canada, they test you for your driver's licence. Serco are also the largest air traffic controllers in the world. They've got 54 towers in the US, and they control Baghdad's air traffic. They even maintain the RAF squadron the Queen flies on. All over the planet, Serco are moving people, from metros in Dubai to buses in Adelaide. And they're good at stopping people from moving too. Serco will soon be the largest operator of private prisons in the UK, and they're very efficient at it. In one prison, they increase capacity by 20%, simply by putting beds in the toilets. In another Serco prison, a 14-year-old hanged himself after being assaulted by Serco guards, the UK's youngest ever death in custody. But don't think Serco aren't good with kids. In Bradford, they run all the state schools in the district. Serco is the model of a modern multinational, and that's why they're the right company to keep us safe. They've been running the UK's ballistic missile defence system ever since it was outsourced 40 years ago. In fact, they look after Britain's entire nuclear arsenal, from creation to decommissioning. But wait, there's more. Serco are so good at running things, they even run time itself. That's right, Serco have the contract for setting Greenwich Mean Time. And Serco just keep getting bigger. Since 1994, they've grown by 1,200%. How have they been so successful? CEO Chris Hyman puts his success with Serco down to listening to God. Now, you might think things like nuclear arsenals and border protection are best handled by the government, but that's not a problem for Serco because about 85% of their workforce are ex-public servants, so they have all the training and connections necessary to handle big government contracts. In Australia, Serco have a presence on every military base, run every immigration detention centre, 2 prisons, cross-country trains like the Indian Pacific and the GAN, and they're bidding on more contracts right now, including one to run prisons across New South Wales. So, even if you don't know their name, chances are you're caught in their web. Serco, bringing service to life.
Isn't that amazing?
Makes me feel a little uncomfortable. I don't like to see a company get that big. I don't think it's good for people.
Oh, of course it's
good. I think it's good for Serco, but not good for us.
Too big to fail.
Too much power. Let's read this. Go up.
Yeah.
An international crime called Gaza.
I thought it was important.
A fully premeditated international crime of genocide has been taking place during the last 62 years in the heart of the Arab world. The victims are the Palestinian people, especially those in the Gaza Strip. The assassin is the worst ever terrorist group deceptively called the Israeli Defense Forces under the leadership of the theoretically most racist, God's chosen, deceitfully self self-proclaimed democratic Jewish-only Israel. Israel had been created, financed, armed, and politically protected by mainly British and American rapture vision-obsessed Talmudist power elites consisting of profit-seeking financiers and military-industrial complex. In December 2008, this Israeli terrorist force has added another war crime to its long list of war crimes against the Palestinians since 1948. One more time, the international political community has become an accomplice to one or more Israeli war crimes, either by being a passive silent witness or by becoming an active participant and protector of Israeli war crimes. One more international war crime has been perpetrated against the Palestinians. It is an international crime since multi-political regimes, Israeli, American, European, and even Arab governments had joined in this crime that is still going on up to this very minute. For almost the last 3 years, Israel has subjected Gaza to an illegal economic siege, which itself constitutes a crime against humanity. Israel had and still is preventing the entry into Gaza of vital life-sustaining products such as foodstuffs, fuel, medicine, and needed medical equipment, water purification equipment, and many building materials. This is a genocidal crime using hunger and thirst as weapons. Starting late December of 2008 and for a continuous 22 days, Israeli terrorist army had perpetrated a genocidal war crime against Gaza Palestinians. The Israeli army, known to be the fourth powerful army in the world, attacked unarmed civilian Palestinians of Gaza, comprising mostly of children, women, and old people. There was no regular army in Gaza to face the well-equipped, well-trained-to-murder Israeli army, only a few male civilians who took it on themselves to carry light arms that they could obtain to resist the Israeli war criminals in order to protect their own families. The Israeli military radio station announced that half of the Israeli Air Force had conducted 2,500 air sorties, dropping a total of 1 million kgs of explosives on the civilian families of Gaza. This is not counting the shells fired by the artillery and tanks that had used high-precision GPS-guided bombs to destroy vital locations such as the UN food warehouse, schools, government buildings, hospitals, medical clinics, religious buildings, and civilian institutions.
You want me to read it?
Yeah.
From this observation of the videotaped explosion in Gaza, the British weapons expert Di Williams concluded that the Israeli army has used dime bombs to guarantee murder of victims, phosphorus bombs producing 900 centigrade degrees of heat, and DU bombs producing 5,000 centigrade degrees of heat, that is equal to the heat of the sun's surface. I mean, they were dropping this on these kids and old people in Palestine. It's sick people, man. The Israeli soldiers themselves have admitted and boasted to breaking the silence organization of committing war crimes in Gaza. These include, among many, the deliberate murders of civilians, including women and children, using civilians as human shields, shelling homes after hoarding groups of civilians inside, and destroying and vandalizing properties in civilian homes and writing hate and racial graffiti on the walls. Israeli criminal leaders were not satisfied with their destruction of Gaza infrastructures, contaminating agricultural land and water, and murdering some 1,500 Palestinians. They had carefully chosen the most lethal weapons of mass destruction that will cause the death of Palestinians who survived the attack and the death of their future-born generations. Besides their devastating environmental contamination, effects the Israeli bombs were found to have long-lasting reproductive toxic, carcinogenic, genotoxic, phytotoxic, and pathogenic effects on humans. The study titled Craters, Gaza, 2006 to 2009, and respectively WP Bomb Gaza 2009, published on www.newweapons.org, was done by Professor Mario Barberi, CNR, Rome, Professor Mozzaro Barberi, University of Rome, and Professor Paolo Maduca, University of Geneva. They analyzed dirt samples from four bomb craters in Gaza and residual components of spent Israeli bombs. Their analysis found unusual concentrations of molybdenum, male sperm toxicant, copper, nickel, cadmium, and mercury carcinogenics, tungsten, genotoxic and phytotoxic, zinc and manganese, carcinogenic and phytotoxic aluminum, phytotoxic and pathogen affecting nervous systems and kidneys, and cobalt, DNA repair inhibitor, and mutagenic. I mean, this is all stuff that they're trying to destroy this entire race of people, okay, through genetic and every other form.
Even now, after a year of the Israeli barbaric war crimes against the Gaza, the Israeli Air Force bombards life vital centers while the Israeli army uses bulldozers to razz fertile farmlands, destroy crops, and shoot farmers. The Israeli attack boats have become worse than the Somali pirates. They attack and sink Palestinian fishing boats. They fire at, kidnap, confiscate international humanitarian aid materials loaded on the boats of Free Gaza organizations. In blatant violating of all international laws, and a disdain to all humanitarian appeals, the terrorist Israeli state has severely tightened its military siege against the Gaza Strip after the end of its last onset in January 2009. Palestinians in Gaza are living without clean drinking water, bare minimum food, without electricity, and without necessary medical supplies. This is a real Holocaust. A Holocaust is the premeditated plan to exterminate masses of people, such as the 1.5 million Palestinians in Gaza, whether through gassing, incendiary phosphorus, DUs in WMD bombs, hunger and thirst, or any other means leading to a mass death. Instead of coming to the aid of Palestinians, the UN reverted to its old tactic of blaming the Palestinian victims and Ban Ki-moon requesting a permanent ceasefire. In its meeting, the UN had totally ignored the Palestinians' elected Hamas government, a major part of this conflict. Rather, it listened to the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, who humiliatingly begged the UN for help, promising to do everything to secure peace. In an indirect way, he blamed Hamas government and did not even criticize Israel's aggression.
The UNSC issued Resolution 1860 that ignored realities of Israeli genocide of Palestinians, exonerated the Israeli terrorists, blamed the Palestinian victims as usual, and equated them with the Israeli terrorist army. It stressed the urgency of and called for an immediate durable ceasefire leading to full withdrawal of Israeli forces. It called for efforts to prevent alleged illicit trafficking of arms into Gaza, but not the sale of arms to Israel, thus denying the Palestinians any means of defending their lives against terrorist Israel. It misrepresented the conflict as a humanitarian crisis by calling the international community to provide humanitarian aid to alleviate the suffering of Gazans. This is not a humanitarian crisis and Israeli occupation. It is a political conflict with grave humanitarian consequences. This is a genocidal Holocaust of 1.5 million Palestinians through thirst, starvation, and the use of WMDs. This is blatant, naked war crimes. Ban Ki-moon was sent to visit Gaza after the Israeli onslaught. He cared only to check the bombed UN warehouse and schools, but not the civilian suffering. He cared more for the buildings than humans. He later expressed his pleasure that Israeli leaders had agreed to meet with UN representatives to discuss the precautions that further accidental bombings of UN facilities could be avoided. Thus, meeting with Israeli war criminals has become a UN pleasure. He stated further that he would close any investigation into Israeli war crimes. And whatever Israel bombs and destroys, Western donors volunteer to pay for. These donors' countries pledged $4.5 billion for Gaza reconstruction for the condition that such money is paid to Abbas, Palestinian Authority, and not Hamas. After a whole year of the onslaught, Gaza Palestinians have never received one cent of that money, and no reconstruction has even started. And most of the money has gone into the private pockets of Abbas's gang and to his security forces.
After the failure of Israeli siege of Gaza and its onslaught on the Strip to destroy the democratically elected Hamas government, the Western countries stepped in to produce harsher measures. In February 2009, experts from nine Western countries, U.S., U.K., France, Canada, Germany, Italy, Spain, the Netherlands, and Norway, met in Copenhagen to discuss ways of combating alleged weapons smuggling into Gaza. Their main consideration was to use Egypt as a land front to further tighten the siege against Gaza, specifically to target the underground tunnels Gazans used to smuggle in foodstuffs, goods, and fuel. They also decided to send NATO warships into the Mediterranean, Red Sea, and Persian Gulf to intercept alleged weapons smuggling from Iran to the Gaza. At the end of January 2009, French President Nicolas Sarkozy sent a frigate with helicopters to the waters off Gaza to combat arms smuggling into the Palestinian territories. He ordered his foreign minister, Bernard Kouchner, to coordinate closely with the U.S. and EU to come up with more effective ways to fight arms smuggling on land and sea. Sarkozy said, "We have pledged to help Israel and Egypt with all the technical, military, naval, and diplomatic ways to help end the smuggling of weapons into Gaza." British Prime Minister Gordon Brown issued an order to deploy the British Navy to the region to help fight weapons smuggling. "We'll send Royal Navy to help fight weapons smuggling," he stated courageously. Latest British scandal came this month when its Foreign Office Minister Ivan Lewis said the UK is urgently looking into reforming its laws to protect Israeli war criminals such as Tzibi Levni from being arrested. Germany sent end of January border police exports and equipment to detect and destroy tunnels in the Gaza Strip. German Deputy Interior Minister August Hanning claiming that Egypt had requested the detection equipment and the technical skills. A newly elected American president at the time, Barack Obama, has also sent American vessels into the region to board all suspected vessels of smuggling weapons. He has also asked the Gulf states, especially Saudi Arabia, to help combat arms smuggling. The U.S. has sent surveillance cameras and underground sound sensors to Egypt to be installed on the border with Gaza. Recently, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has constructed treated steel plates and is helping Egypt install them as an underground wall on the Gaza border to prevent tunnel digging.
This is insanity. I mean, if this is not a complete and utter planned genocide of these people, then nothing is. While denying Palestinians acquire any arms for self-defense, the U.S. and EU member states are major arms exporters to Israel. According to figures from Brussels and European Union, member states authorized the export of 2,000 pounds, 200 million, I'm sorry, export of $200 million in arms exports.
Million pounds in arms exports.
Okay, to Israel in 2007. With France far and away the Israelis' biggest European weapons supplier. According to the EU, 2008 reports on arms export licenses published in December from the 2007 calendar year and consolidating the accounts that member states must annually submit. 18 member states authorized a total of 1,018 such licenses to Israel worth £199,409,348. The U.S. is the largest arms exporter to Israel. Successive American administrations had sold Israel and the latest, the most technologically and most devastating weapons. According to Amnesty International, the U.S. has provided Israel with $8.3 billion worth of weapons between 2004 and 2007. In 2002, the U.S. granted Israel $21 billion worth in military aid. Israel's 2006 war against Lebanon and its 2008 and 2009 war against Gaza were carried using American weapons. Still, Obama's administration has delivered late last January 14th, no, Jan- last January, 14,000 tons of weapons to Israel delivered by the German cargo ship Wehr Elbe to Israel port of Ashdod. Recently, Peace Prize winner President Barack Obama has signed off a $2.775 billion in further defense aid for Israel and part of the $30 billion over 10 years. Last Monday, 12/21/09, Obama was approved a defense spending bill that includes another $2.2 million in funds for Israel's missile defense program, more than double what was approved last year. All this while American economy is collapsing, housing crisis is exacerbating, and unemployment rates are rising. And it seems for Obama's administration, the Israeli citizen is more important than the American taxpayer. You can also refer to the article, Arming Terrorist Israel.
EU and the U.S. don't mind breaking their own laws for the sake of arming terrorists. This is quite a long...
But it is long.
It goes
it's much
on.
Longer, but still, it's a very important article. So we can go on if you want.
Okay. Let's see, where were we?
During the Israeli 22-day onslaught on Gaza, Arab leaders kept coming up with unreasonable excuses for not convening an urgent summit meeting. When they finally did meet, they, as usual, agreed to disagree on how to deal with the Israeli aggression. They finally begged the UN to interfere. Such delay gave Israelis longer time to murder more Palestinians and destroy more homes.
The Arab League later on issued a resolution calling for breaking Israel's siege on the Gaza, yet they donated money to Abbas's security force controlled by American General Dayton to oppose the democratically elected Hamas government. Instead of feeding the starving Palestinians in Gaza, the League is spending $50 million to protect the lives of endangered marine turtles on 8,000 square meters coastland off of Al Arish in Egypt. What a humanitarian gesture. Like all colonial puppet local regimes, the present Palestinian Authority, under the leadership of Mahmoud Abbas and his thugs, had hijacked the Palestinian leadership and offered Palestine and its people on the Israeli altar to glorify a genocidal God and his chosen people. My previous articles discussed the betrayal of the present Palestinian Authority. This betrayal was recently exposed by Israeli audio and video recordings of these so-called Palestinian leaders urging the Israelis to attack Gaza to finish off the elected Hamas government, regardless of any Palestinian casualties. Abbas and his PA also tried to muffle Goldstone's report about Israel's crimes. Besides crushing dissidents in any form of pro-Palestinian solidarity, Jordan has become a training campground for Abbas's security forces under the supervision of the American General Keith Dayton. Dayton had established a twin sister of the American School of the Assassins to suppress Palestinian resistance. It was reported that about 4,000 trainees of the school were ready to enter and control Gaza after the anticipated discretion of Hamas government.
Destruction
of the Hamas government. Besides suppressing and robbing its own citizens for the last 28 years, Hosni Mubarak's Egyptian regime has played the most active role and second to Israel in opposing elected Palestinian government and in the destruction of Gaza and its starving its people. To ease Mubarak's conscience for participating in such genocide of his Arab brothers, his regime has paid a handsome $2 billion in the form of American aid.
Now, what they don't say is that was the agreement made by none other than the great Jimmy, Mahmoud Carter,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and in the Camp David Accord, that was paying $2 billion to Egypt every year to be at peace with Israel, while at the same time paying Israel unknown billions of dollars, uncounted billions of dollars to do what they want. And, it's a sick freaking deal. Should be cut off. Should these two companies, what they are doing to the Palestinian people is none other than a godless,
genocide.
Horrid, satanic murder, okay? Sacrifice
okay.
To some
committed
evil
crimes
freaking
against
deity.
By fully participating in the Israeli siege against Gaza. Rather than helping the next-door homeless and hungry Arab brothers of the Gaza Strip, the Mubarak's regime preferred to send, last May, an airplane full with humanitarian aid to Sri Lanka on the opposite side of the globe. This regime was a stubborn obstacle in the face of every international solidarity movement and organization who tries to break the siege against Gaza. The regime blocked the entry of thousands of tons of badly needed food aid to Gaza, letting them rot in the desert heat and finally burn them as spoiled food. Under the deceptive banner of fighting arms smuggling into Gaza, it erected the most sophisticated surveillance equipment to detect and prevent life-sustaining materials delivered to Gaza through tunnels.
This month, December 2009, the Egyptian Mubarak regime, with the help of American Army Corps engineers, is building an underground steel wall to block tunnel digging and is running underground pipes to flood the existing tunnels with seawater. Egyptian regime has opposed the elected Hamas Palestinian leadership and sided with the Western puppet Abbas, whose presidency has expired. It has sabotaged all reconciliation attempts between the two Palestinian factions by imposing harsh conditions against Hamas government and altering the text of the agreement before signature. The Egyptian policy toward their Palestinian brothers in Gaza, many of whom carry Egyptian citizenship, was reflected in the confession of its foreign minister on the 11th of November 2008 when he stated that Egypt was closing Rafah crossing with Gaza to punish a Palestinian faction, Hamas. Opening the crossing, in his opinion, constitutes recognition of the Hamas legitimacy. And unlike
the silence over the Holocaust during World War II, conscientious citizens of these same international criminal governments are actively mobilized to act against terrorist Israel and the genocidal policies of their governments. Through breaking Gaza siege campaigns, many of them, such as Viva Palestinia and the Hope Convoys, are delivering humanitarian aid to Gaza. They have also organized boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaigns to boycott companies that sustain Israeli occupation on Palestine, such as Motorola and Caterpillar, as well as academic and cultural boycotts of all Israeli academic and cultural institutions. All of them are supported by the Israeli government. The effects of these campaigns has penetrated the blindly pro-Zionist American Congress, where on December 18th, Representatives Jim McDermott and Keith Ellison are seeking signatures on the Dear Colleague letter to President Obama criticizing Israel's siege of Gaza. Representatives Jim Moran and Bob Ingalls are also seeking signatures on another Dear Colleague letter to Secretary of State Clinton, urging her to pressure Israeli government to end the ban on student travel from Gaza to the West Bank. This week, protests are organized in major countries around the world, the U.S., the U.K., France, Turkey, Ireland, Germany, Spain, Austria, Belgium, Switzerland, Sweden, Canada, Poland, Denmark, Greece, Jordan, and occupied Palestine, commemorating the first anniversary of the Israeli onslaught against Gaza. Under the principles of universal jurisdiction, we are witnessing Western courts issuing arrest warrants against Israeli leaders, Zibi Livni, and Army generals, former military chief Moshe Yalon, and General Doron Almog for committing war crimes. International lawyers are filing for more arrest warrants against more Israeli war criminals. Soon, Israeli leaders will be chased across the globe as war criminals, the same way Israel has chased German Nazis as war criminals.
Now, if you tell me, okay, that Israel is a just and should be authorized legal state, folks, you know, you're kidding yourself. You're a delusion. Your delusions of whatever they are absolute delusions. Israeli delusion is not a delusion. It's a reality that's a menace to the world. You know,
here is something to listen to that you might find interesting. Corporate media steps up Al Qaeda in Yemen propaganda.
Let's get to the latest from our CBS News national correspondent, Jim Axelrod, who is in Detroit. Jim, good morning.
Well, good morning, Deb. You know, since the moment that Abdulmutallab was taken into custody, he's been claiming he was trained by Al-Qaeda. Now Al-Qaeda leaders are saying they were behind the attack on Flight 253.
Al-Qaeda now says that the Christmas Day attack was payback for U.S.-assisted air attacks against the terror group by the Yemeni government, promising that we are bringing you slaughter and we have prepared for you men who cherish death just like you cherish life.
They are a threat not only to Yemen, but also they are a threat to all our neighboring countries.
Abdulmutallab has told investigators he's the first of a new wave trained by Al-Qaeda in Yemen for attacks on U.S. interests, and that Al-Qaeda operatives there made him this underwear that allegedly had the explosive sewn into the band to escape detection. Monday, President Obama promised a review of the screening and terrorist watch systems that clearly failed in this case, as well as a hunt for others who might have helped Abdulmutallab.
We will not rest until we find all who were involved and hold them accountable.
Among the subjects for review, how the intelligence community handled warnings from Abdulmutallab's father that his son was involved with religious extremists, and why those warnings weren't enough to put Abdulmutallab on a no-fly list.
Federal prosecutors say they will ask a judge for a DNA sample from Abdulmutallab. They want to see if they can connect him to other terror plots.
Harry? Jim Axelrod in Detroit this morning. Thank you.
The absurdity behind this statement, all right, is that if they're training, if Yemen, if all they can do is stick a bottle of explosives in a guy's underwear, okay, to burn off his own balls, I mean, that is the most stupid, moronic terrorist plot I've ever heard. And to bring the President of the United States out on a special day, Christmas, to announce his new plan of tightening security is absolutely a joke. All the guy did was blow up his own balls, for crying out loud. He didn't do any harm to anybody. You know what I mean? He was just a deluded idiot kid, okay? Who somebody who got in said it's absolutely stupid, all right? And then they threw some other stupid idiot, a couple of days later through the same process and it went through no problem. And the other guy was picked up.
I don't know.
So you know this whole Al Qaeda thing, this whole Yemen thing, just another. I mean, as soon as the terrorist thing rolls down. You know, always around Christmas. Last Christmas, it was the Mumbai explosion and all that the stuff in India and all this other crap. Okay, and then this time, it's some idiot kid from Nigeria that blows up his own balls. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. This is very interesting. This one here. This is on the new movie Avatar.
Well, actually, it isn't really.
Yeah, it is.
I read the article.
I did too.
Okay.
This is about the new movie, Avatar.
It isn't. It really tells about the new age Illuminati religion. That's all it talks about. It doesn't really say anything about the movie.
Can you go back to that? I'd like to disagree with you on that in a way. The Avatar movie is just the latest installment from Hollywood to move us closer to accepting the global elite psychopathic religious beliefs.
And then it tells about that religion.
Now, this is true, but nevertheless, the characters in Avatar are supposed to be
based on
this religion, right? Based on these concepts, all right? Another, Plato, the Greek philosopher, taught that the five elements, fire, earth, water, air, and ether, the last element, ether, can best be described as pure energy or light. It is the stuff of the eternities. Gnosticism, the religious belief of the Knights Templar, holds that mankind is nothing more or less than ether trapped in a physical world and held there by Satan. They call him the demiurge. And multiple reincarnations, they held a man or woman could become purified and ultimately freed from the other elements. New Age religions call those with perfect ether content ascendant masters. George Bush referred to them as the 1,000 points of light. They include Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, etc. And it goes on. If you want to check this out, go to Dead Man Musings com, and the article on Avatar kind of gives you a broader look at what they're really trying to portray.
It just tells about religion, that's all.
Okay, cop went wild with taser. Okay, that's pretty much the stuff we just did.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Or get used to it.
Or get used to it, yeah. Okay. Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably good.
His one, impeach Nazi Reid for crimes against humanity.
Yeah, I was just going to say that this bomber's briefs. Do you want to read that? You want to look at that?
Okay.
Yeah, this is another update on the bomber. How strange. The attached photo is supposed to, it's a picture of the guy's
underwear
blown up. Attached photo suppressed the underwear worn. Supposedly, the underwear worn by the would-be Northwest bomber all over the news. Supposedly, there was a smoke and fire up to the ceiling of the cabin, according to one witness. The bomber was burned enough to have to go to the hospital. The explosive he supposedly mixed in his drawers and then set ablaze would bring down the huge airliner. Time to ramp up more nonsense about TSA. No potty trips and get ready to stand naked in front of their body scanners, or you don't fly. Will you put your 13-year-old daughter or 10-year-old son in the front of one of those scanners for some stranger to look at? How do you think that will affect your children, even if you don't mind being stripped naked? So how come his undies are so clean-looking? One would think there would be burning, tearing, ripping, and black soot. And it's true. That is that there's no burn at all on this guy's under.
I don't know what that is.
Probably crap, you know?
Read more.
All right. So, I mean, they got a picture of the guy's underwear. That's bizarre. And
the photo shows a neatly cut up pair of underwear. I guess it's briefs that almost look washed and fairly clean. I don't know what the sewn in part is supposed to look like or what men's underwear in the third world countries look like either. To me, it looks like a reinforced crotch area in some kind of box of shorts. Let me look. Yep. The ABC piece says, the first photo shows the slightly charred underpants with the bomb packet still in place. All photos included a ruler to provide scale. If there was this fire in the guy's crotch that would take down an airliner, killing all 300 passengers, how come the bomb packet is still in place? Slightly charred? What happened to the fire that would explode the big jet? Yes, there are explosives that have such force even in a tiny amount. Could blow up a huge jet. Is that the case here? Who knows? Every time some government official in D.C. opens their mouth, expect a lie. The Red in the White House, vacationing in Hawaii, waited, 3 days to speak to the American people? Pretty serious stuff, huh? It just seems a bit odd, and how is it that the ABC News gets a pristine photo of the underwear considered evidence to release to the public? Reminds me of the photo switch in Dubrovnik, the plane crash that allegedly killed former Commerce Secretary Ron Brown, who somehow got a hole in his head from a bullet.
Well, warmonger Joe Lieberman says, this is enough that we must make a preemptive strike against Yemen. Does that mean the thieves in the Congress will stop stealing the fruits of our labor to throw at yet another corrupt government? Where is the U.S. Constitution?
Does it authorize Congress to steal from your paycheck to fund this putrid world government game plan?
Yemen donors believe stabilizing President Saleh's regime will thwart the devolution of Yemen into a failed state and an al-Qaeda safe haven. U.S. aid proposed for 2010 is at the highest levels in years. The Department of Defense allocated $66 million in military aid, mostly for patrol boats and armored pickups. Congress Foreign Operation Appropriation Bill includes an additional $15 million in military and $40 million in development and economic aid. And other humanitarian aid is channeled through USAID. However, increased funding to Yemen is a questionable strategy that may accelerate instability.
All borrowed money while the people's purse, the U.S. Treasury, is overdrawn, $12.1 trillion. All the interest slapped on the backs of American workers, our children and grandchildren, to feed more corrupt regimes in the never-ending, nebulous war on terror, the big cash cow for the global bankers, the military war machine, and the ruling communitarian elites.
There you go. That is the way that it is.
Do we have that?
Yeah, I'm thinking we do. I'm going to try here.
So while Leo's trying to get that tape, how about this one? Impeach Nazi Reid for crimes against humanity. It helps them, the little people, understand you're simply better than they are. Not only did Harry Reid jam through the Senate a Hitler-like healthcare bill with its IMAC-IMAB death panels modeled on Hitler's T4 genocide program of 1939, not only did he jam it through while keeping secret the Hitlerites for all eternity to come clauses, six of them which would unconstitutionally prevent any future Senate or House of Representatives from ever challenging. In correspondence below, Lyndon LaRouche shows that all those for all eternity to come clauses are identical to clauses in the Lisbon Treaty through which the British Empire intends to keep continental Europe in colonial servitude for all eternity to come. Not only did Reid do this, he did much, much worse. We just learned Monday evening that no one else but Harry Reid is the author of these six for all eternity to come clauses. Let's see.
Impeach Nazi Reid for...
Yeah, I just read that.
You got to watch LaRouche stuff, though. Yeah.
Let's see.
LaRouche is kind of a madman himself.
You can reach each of them below. They will indeed hang around Harry Reid's wreck for all the eternity to come. Did you get that?
No, there's nothing on it. It's not good.
Let me hear
it.
They were not in the House bill. Yeah, I mean, he has some interesting things in here.
All right, go ahead. But LaRouche isn't known as a madman, so it's like if you want to go with LaRouche, go ahead.
They were not in the House Bill H.R. 3962, nor were they in the House Bill the Senate Finance Committee voted up. Then where did they come from? Simple. They were inserted in secret behind closed-door sessions run by Harry Reid. And only Harry Reid in his office before he first brought the so-called health care bill onto the Senate floor. That's fascism, LaRouche said. It makes him an Adolf Hitler offender.
I gotta knock this out. I don't like a lot of what Rents puts up because half the people on Rents are madmen.
I was looking to see
these guys.
What the wording is, but I don't see anything actually.
No, it's a useless
All it is though. Is a lot of rhetoric, but they don't say what was put in the bill.
No,
I was trying to find
that. It's not there, and you can tell. Anything on LaRouche or anything by LaRouche on this site is a bogus, is really bogus.
There's no quote from what Harry Reid put in.
It's just saying
that he put it in, but they don't have the word.
But if you listen to anything, I don't think you ever have.
To Lyndon LaRouche years ago, not recently.
He's a freaking nutball, okay? So, I mean, nobody listens to him other than nutballs, right? So it's like... And Rents, unfortunately, it used to have some interesting stuff. Now it's mostly all nutballs. So it's like it's hard to read anything from Rents.
Do we have another audio that we could play here?
Somewhere, yeah. If you just let me go for it. FDA approves Crestor for people who have no health problems. Big Pharma has been trending this direction for a long time, marketing medicines to people who don't need them. And who have done nothing wrong with their health. It's all part of a ploy to position prescription drugs as nutrients, things you need to take on as a regular basis to prevent disease. The FDA recently gave its nod of approval on a matter announcing that Crestor can now be advertised and prescribed as a preventative medicine. No longer does a patient need to have anything wrong with them to warrant this expensive prescription medication. They only need to remember that the brand name of the drug for television ads. Crying out loud. Merck's cervical cancer vaccine ads are inaccurate and misleading. Women's groups and doctors slammed the advertisement issued by two pharmaceutical majors that claimed vaccination against human papilloma virus was the best way of preventing cervical cancer. The objection from SAMA Source Center for Women and Health and SAMA Sali Women Resource, Jesus Christ, again, I mean, there's not, again, even, okay, Center to GlaxoSmithKline, India and Merck marketing HPV vaccines and protection against cervical cancer comes a few days after Central Drug Standards Control Organization also took notice of the advertisement. So they were, so their ads are all wrong on the cervical cancer crap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That took a lot of breath. For nothing. And let's see.
I wanted to go down.
Well, that's all. Let's see what there's something new there. Oh, this was interesting. Let's see where it's from.
TheWashingtonExaminer.com. The Obama administration pledged Thursday to provide unlimited financial assistance to mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, an 11th-hour move that allows the government to exceed the current $400 billion cap on emergency aid without seeking permission from a bailout-weary Congress. The Christmas Eve announcement by the Treasury Department means that it can continue to run the companies which were seized last year as arms of the government for the rest of the President Obama's current term. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac disclosed that they have received approval from the federal regulator to pay $42 million in Wall Street-style compensation of packages to 12 top executives for 2009. Compensation package includes up to $6 million each to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's chief executives.
And they ran those companies right into
the
ground.
Does not make you sick.
They ran those companies right into the ground. And, now Obama wants to give them more money.
Yeah.
As bonuses. $42 million in bonuses.
What's he going to get back? How much do they kick back to him?
Oh, probably half. Probably getting half their bonuses. Ian Geithner. It's a sick freaking world, I'll tell you.
It really is.
Let me just see. There was something I wanted to.
Here's one. The Vudla.
The RFID warfare has just begun.
Let's see what that has to say.
That's only about a minute, but we'll. German passport with RFID RFID scanner registering the chip. It's all visual, so you can't really.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, let's see if there's something else. You play this one?
Mm-hmm.
That one?
Yep. My bailout money.
Yeah. They take those billions and trillions and give it to their own kind. Hope you don't mind being robbed blind. You can check that out if you want.
Yeah.
This one I thought might be really interesting. I don't know.
BBC now admits Al Qaeda never existed. Let's see what that is.
Yeah. This is about 10 minutes.
Even Bin Laden's displays of strength to the Western media were faked. The fighters in this video had been hired for the day and told to bring their own weapons. For beyond his own small group, Bin Laden had no formal organization until the Americans invented one for him. In January 2001, a trial began in a Manhattan courtroom of four men accused of the embassy bombings in East Africa. But the Americans had also decided to prosecute Bin Laden in his absence. But to do this under American law, The prosecutors needed evidence of a criminal organization, because as with the mafia, that would allow them to prosecute the head of the organization, even if he could not be linked directly to the crime. And the evidence for that organization was provided for them by an ex-associate of Bin Laden's called Jamal Al-Fadl.
During the investigation of the 1998 bombings, there is a walk-in source, Jamal Al-Fadl, who's a Sudanese militant who was with Bin Laden in the early 90s, who has been passed around a whole series of Middle Eastern secret services, none of whom want much to do with him, who ends up in America and is taken on by the American government, effectively, as a key prosecution witness, and given a huge amount of American taxpayers' money at the same time. His account is used as raw material to build up a picture of Al-Qaeda. The picture that the FBI want to build up is one that will fit the existing laws that they will have to use to prosecute those responsible for the bombing. Now, those laws were drawn up to counteract organized crime, the mafia, drugs crime, crimes where people being a member of an organization is extremely important. You have to have an organization to get a prosecution. And you have Al-Fadl and a number of other witnesses, a number of other sources, who are happy to feed into this, who got material that looked at in a certain way can be seen to show this organization's existence. You put the two together and you get what is the first Bin Laden myth, the first Al-Qaeda myth. And because it's one of the first, it's extremely influential.
The picture Al-Fadl drew for the Americans of Bin Laden was of an all-powerful figure at the head of a large terrorist network that had an organized hierarchy of control. He also said that Bin Laden had given this network a name, Al-Qaeda. It was a dramatic and powerful picture of Bin Laden, but it bore little relationship to the truth. The reality was that Bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri had become the focus of a loose association of disillusioned Islamist militants who were attracted by the new strategy. But there was no organization. These were militants who mostly planned their own operations and looked to Bin Laden for funding and assistance. He was not their commander. There is also no evidence that Bin Laden used the term Al-Qaeda to refer to the name of a group until after September the 11th, when he realized that this was the term the Americans had given him. In reality, Jamal Al-Fadl was on the run from Bin Laden, having stolen money from him. In return for his evidence, the Americans gave him witness protection in America and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Many lawyers at the trial believed that Al-Fadl exaggerated and lied to give the Americans the picture of a terrorist organization that they needed to prosecute Bin Laden.
And there were selective portions of Al-Fadl's testimony that I believe was false to help support the picture that he helped the Americans join together. I think he lied in a number of specific testimony about a unified image of what this organization was. It made Al-Qaeda the new mafia or the new communists. It made them identifiable as a group and therefore made it easier to prosecute any person associated with Al-Qaeda for any acts were statements made by Bin Laden, who talked a lot.
The idea, which is critical to the FBI's prosecution, that Bin Laden ran a coherent organization with operatives and cells all around the world, of which you could be a member, is a myth. There is no Al-Qaeda organization. There is no international network with a leader with cadres who will unquestioningly obey orders, with tentacles that stretch out to sleeper cells in America, in Africa, in Europe. That idea of a coherent, structured terrorist network with an organized capability
simply does not exist.
In December, the Northern Alliance told the Americans that Bin Laden was hiding in the mountains of Tora Bora. They were convinced they had found the heart of his organization.
The search for Osama bin Laden, there was constant discussion about him hiding out in caves, and I think many times the American people have a perception that it's a little hole dug out of the side of a mountain.
Oh, no.
This is it. This is a fortress,
yes.
A complex, multi-tiered, bedrooms and offices on the top, as you can see, secret exits on the side and and on the bottom, cut deep to avoid thermal detection, a ventilation system to allow people to breathe and to carry on. The entrance is large enough to drive trucks and even tanks, even computer systems and telephone systems. It's a very sophisticated operation.
Oh, you bet. This is serious business, and there's not one as well. There are many of those.
Today, the Americans bombed the mountains of Tora Bora with the most powerful weapons they had. The Northern Alliance have been paid more than $1 million for their help and information. And now, their fighters set off up the mountains to storm Bin Laden's fortress and bring back the Al-Qaeda terrorists and their leader.
It doesn't exist.
But all they found were a few small caves, which were either empty or had been used to store ammunition. There was no underground bunker system, no secret tunnels. The fortress didn't exist.
All made up.
The Northern Alliance did produce some prisoners they claimed were Al-Qaeda fighters, but there was no proof of this. And one rumor was that the Northern Alliance was simply kidnapping anyone who looked remotely like an Arab and selling them to the Americans for yet more money. The Americans now began to search all the caves in all the mountains of eastern Afghanistan for the hidden Al-Qaeda network.
We found a cave. The rest of it is open, right?
If nobody went up to look into that cave, people could have been hiding up there for days and watching everything that we did.
But wherever they looked, there was nothing there. Al-Qaeda seemed to have completely disappeared. But then, the British arrived to help. They were convinced they could hunt down Al-Qaeda because of what they said was their unique experience in fighting terrorism in Northern Ireland. They could succeed where others had failed.
The hunt for Al-Qaeda Taliban goes on. And we stand shoulder to shoulder with the United States and our other coalition allies in the global war of terrorism.
But how many Al-Qaeda have you captured?
None.
We haven't captured any Al-Qaeda. But
and how many have you actually managed to kill here in southeast Afghanistan?
None.
We haven't killed any.
The truth was there was nothing there because Al-Qaeda as an organization did not exist. In looking for an organization, the Americans and the British were chasing a phantom enemy and missing the real threat.
He believes their own propaganda.
I was with the Royal Marines as they trooped around eastern Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And every time they got a location for a supposed Al-Qaeda or Taliban element or base, they turn up and there was no one there. There'd be a few startled shepherds, and that struck me then as being a wonderful image for the war on terror, because people are looking for something that isn't there. There is no organization with its terrorist operatives, cells, sleeper cells, so on and so forth. What there is an idea prevalent among young, angry Muslim males throughout the Islamic world. That idea is what opposes the threat.
So there you go, folks.
They really were.
BBC admits
no,
that Al-Qaeda never existed.
It was all made up.
And it's just a crock of crap. So there you go.
Oh, you're fighting something you can't even see.
It doesn't exist.
It's an idea.
The only idea is, I mean, you would have that same idea if people were invading your country and blowing you up. So it's absolutely absurd.
So So that's kind of it for tonight.
Yeah, we want to thank everybody who listened and tell your friends about it, and we wish you a very... We won't be on tomorrow or Friday.
And we're sorry we couldn't bring you the interview. It just Leo couldn't get it to queue
right,
up. It was
right.
kind of choppy last night anyway. So.
But we want to thank everybody and wish you a very, very happy New Year.
And have a great New Year, folks.
Yeah, and good night.